In today's episode, we do a deep dive into some of the challenges churches face as we switch over to online services. Just because your services are a certain way in person doesn't mean you have to do things the same way online. We came up with 8 ways your online services should be different from your in-person services. We hope it helps your church reach more people and grow. You're listening to the Reach Right podcast, the show dedicated to helping pastors and church leaders reach people the right way. Hosted by me, Thomas Costello, and with me as always is my co-host, Ian Hyatt. We're here to help your church see more visitors and grow. Hey guys, welcome to the Reach Right podcast, episode number 5. Thanks so much for being with us here today. As always, I'm Thomas Costello, and my co-host today is...
Ian Hyatt. Hey.
Hey, glad you could be with us here, Ian, today, and looking forward to talking about our topic at hand. It is 8 ways that your online service should be different from your in-person services. I think this is going to be a really good conversation to dive into because... so many churches are doing online services for the first time over these last few months there. And I'm sure we've learned a lot. I don't know about you, but I've noticed that there's lots of ways that maybe we try to make our online services just a recreation of what used to happen on Sunday mornings. And it has occurred to us and probably has occurred to some of our audience that that might not be the best approach for how we should be doing things. So we just wanted to have a conversation around that.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really good topic. And I think we're obviously seeing more churches open up now and attempting to do that. So now, we're running into that. You know, there's almost two totally different services now that we have to address. So there's the online crowd and then the in-person crowd, and there's definitely differences. So it's a real thing now that we're seeing.
Yeah. I think even as churches are opening up, and I don't know, maybe you have some better, I know you talk to a lot more than I do. Like as far as numbers, would you say are most of them have some form of open back up right now, or most still kind of doing online only? Where are we at right now?
Yeah, it's a good question. And of course, I don't talk to every church in the country, but we do talk to obviously many of them, hundreds for sure, since this whole thing has happened. And I think, you know, off the top of my head, we're seeing maybe about, I want to say it's about 50-50.
Yeah.
I think it really is about 50-50. I think a lot of things these days are 50-50, aren't they?
Yeah, a lot of things. And just so the audience knows here too, we're recording this on August the 6th, 2020.
Right.
So this could be very different in a month or two from here. Who knows where the pandemic goes from here. It's all kind of a guess for a lot of us here. But I think even those that are opening back up, masked or unmasked, or all the different ways that they're doing it, we're not here to kind of offer any commentary on how you should be opening up and the health protocols behind that. So we believe in listening to the powers that be with that kind of stuff. But I think that there's a case to be made that even churches that are open back up, you've already put all the work into doing online services. You probably ought to continue doing that because there are a lot of people in every church in the country that probably would prefer to be doing things online or probably feel safer doing things online right now. Are you hearing that too?
Definitely hearing that too. So I think so. There's going to be a good portion of folks that are going to still be concerned and not comfortable going out with, you know, whether or not that's they're older, have issues, or just their beliefs and thought on the whole thing. So I definitely.
Yeah. I mean, it's already a minefield for pastors, I'm sure, trying to navigate how to talk about this. And, you know, you have all these really tricky topics on the coronavirus and how to handle it. Then you had all the things with some of the racial strife that's been happening in our country right now. So there's plenty of minefields. Our goal is to make something a little bit, make things a little bit easier for churches and pastors as they're trying to think through the best way to do online services. And so we came up today with 8 different ways that online services should be different from your in-person services. So why don't we start off by just giving a little bit of the reason why we think that online should be different from in-person, because what we have seen, if you're like me, you've seen a lot of churches that they'll just do a straight reenactment of what used to happen on Sunday mornings before coronavirus, put that online and call it good. And we've seen diminishing results with that. But why do you think that is? Why do you think that churches probably ought to do something different online from what they do on Sunday mornings normally in person?
I think there's several reasons for that, but I think also, as you mentioned at the very beginning, we've learned a lot over this time in the pandemic. I think churches have learned a lot. We've seen a lot of what to do, what not to do. Probably it's been a, trial by fire. We've seen, probably learned a lot more from what not to do just from what we've experienced. But I think the first thing that comes to mind is just that it's a lot harder to keep people engaged on an online service, keeping their attention span. We've seen that's become a real challenge, especially recently compared to when the shutdown first happened. But that's, I think, one of the big reasons for it.
Yeah. I'll say for our family, the first few weeks of shutdown, and that's, March time, I remember that we excitedly got the whole family together, sat on the couch, watched the service. And it was still, I have elementary aged kids and I know you do too, Ian. So same. Like keeping them wrangled and making sure they're paying attention, that was a challenge. Yeah. And I will say that the excitement for us certainly waned over time. And this is not just watching our own services, but watching even other church services. It's seeing things just be a reenactment of Sunday mornings. It probably isn't the most useful way for people to spend their time. So let's, I guess, give people some ideas on how they can make their online services different from their in-person services. Yeah. And maybe this isn't for every church, that maybe not all eight of these are things you are ready to bite off on right away. But I think if you apply some of these, it will probably make your audience more engaged. And in the end, I know sometimes those terms like engagement and stuff, they don't sound as spiritual as we'd want them to sound, but really this is about engaging people with the gospel. Like it's about actually having people hear the message of Jesus Christ. And that matters to us. That's why we do what we do here. So, so let me kick it off, I guess. Number one, the first thing.
Before we dig into the points, you'd mentioned 3 weeks that your family was excited about online services. Ours was a little over a month, so our family's just a little more spiritual than yours. So I just had to make that comment.
I've always known that, but you're the spiritual giant here. So number one is we think that church online services, they should be shorter. This is something that if you're anything like me, you'll watch an online service and you'll have this temptation to maybe like hit the pause button for a second just to see how much longer the service is. Yeah. Guilty? I'm guilty of that. Yeah, absolutely.
Very guilty.
So I really think that in an online format, when you're competing for attention spans and there's kids that are involved, especially if you don't have other programming for kids out there, it has to be shorter. I don't know what the average is. I think I've read that the average church service is between an hour and 15 minutes and an hour and a half in person. Now, there are some of those churches and some of our churches that we really love that have those 2-hour services. As a pastor, I don't know how you can do that every single week or how you can keep people engaged, because then you have people in service looking at their watches. But, I'm going to go out and give people a number here of what I would think would be a reasonable time. And this is going to maybe sound really challenging to people, but I think if you could maybe consider the idea of doing a 30 to 45 minute service for your online service, I think that might be something that's really valuable to people. I think trying to make it the exact same length as your normal Sunday services that you did in person, it's just probably overkill. And I think if you can really pare things down and keep things succinct and make things really and edit yourself enough to get down to 30 to 45 minutes, I think that there's a lot of value in that for people. What do you think?
Yeah. I agree. And it's funny thing that came to mind when you were saying that is that that was recommended even before the pandemic and live streaming services were even a thing. You know, it was just recommended to pastors just based on human attention span.
Right.
And people being able to absorb and apply what they're hearing and remember it to keep it shorter. So, but I think now with what we're forced into, even more so.
That's right.
And I know it's challenging. You know, my pastor, he's one of the more, and I say this in a good way, loving way, long-winded preachers, and it's very challenging for him to be able to cut and shorten things down. And I think we've done a okay job at that so far, but could even be shorter. But totally agree. I think that's a good time frame to most certainly shoot for.
Yeah, I feel like it's bold. I mean, I try to think through. I've pastored churches for 20 years or so, and I know that it would be hard to figure out how to get a service down to 30 minutes. I mean, that would be really challenging. So I don't say this in a vacuum, having never experienced that. So maybe 45 is a better, but I think the hour and a half long idea that people are going to sit there and be engaged for that full time, I think that's just wishful thinking. Unless you must be a much, much better preacher than I am to pull off something like that. Because I know in person, I couldn't keep people engaged for that long, hardly. So trying to do it online, it's a whole nother world. And I guess at least it's number two, you can tackle that. It's a way that we can shorten our services. What's that?
Yeah, it's in the same vein, and as much as we all love worship, and to sing and worship together, that's something that I think we can all agree is it's done so much better in a personal setting.
Yeah.
Compared to online. And so I think, having fewer worship songs is a good idea.
Yep.
As far as what you need to be doing online compared to in person. I would say even, if you're in person meeting, maybe you even want to add an extra song because people are hungry for physical engagement, engagement right now and being back together. But I have found it tough getting back to just kind of what we've joked about as far as our own personal experiences with watching, services online. It's very difficult to stay engaged with anything longer than maybe 3 to 4 songs, depending upon your worship approach at your church and the production and all. There's a lot of things we can tackle and unpack there, but I think having fewer songs, because I don't know about you, Thomas. What I've found is that, and everyone worships differently, when I'm in a church setting, physical church setting, I do like to raise my hands. I'm not doing cartwheels and doing laps around the sanctuary or anything like that. And if that's your thing, that's fine too. But it's very difficult for me when on my couch, with my wife and kiddos, and if we're all watching at once, to get expressive and to be engaged. I mean, hear me the right way. I still, the worship speaks to me. God uses that. I could still express and sing along a bit, but I find it very hard to be fully engaged with it. And when it's already a challenge, to listen to the whole message, like we just talked about, I think this is where we got to also make a cut as well. So,
yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. I think that if it were my church, I'd probably do 2 songs. I think we'd probably do 2. I think that there's value to doing music still. So I think that just to give people a taste and a bit of normalcy, having some kind of a musical component is important. I think I totally agree with you about the disengagement. I don't find myself, it's not that I'm not listening or it's not that I'm not engaging in worship, but it's not the same as an in-person concert. Think about it the same way as if you go to a concert versus listening on the radio. So I know you're a big Metallica fan. Going to a Metallica concert would be different from when you're rocking out to Metallica on Spotify or something like that, right?
Absolutely.
Your expression, you don't headbang the same way on Spotify as you would in person, no doubt, right?
If I went to a Metallica concert these days, I probably wouldn't be doing much headbanging anyway. Maybe in my younger days.
We are too old to headbang. Yeah. It gives headaches.
That's right. We end up getting injuries, but that's right.
Yeah, exactly it. So, but you know, the same thing goes is that, I'm maybe a little bit challenged about this. I don't know that, so I have a choice to be expressive in my worship, and I too am from, Ian and I are both from a hand-raising, maybe like charismatic with a seatbelt kind of backgrounds. That's the way that we kind of experienced worship before. And I will say that there's value, and I love, like, our family sings. So when the music is going, we all kind of sing along, you know, to varying volumes. But I think it's good for my kids to see us worshiping. It doesn't have to only be in church on Sunday mornings, that we can worship right where we are. But I just think that if you're the kind of church that maybe has an extended time of worship, maybe your normal Sunday morning service is four songs, but you do like, you know, the long free-flowing worship time, that may not translate as well to online. It almost certainly doesn't translate as well online to everybody. Maybe a few people will do it. And here's something I'll say too, is that, and we probably should have mentioned this at the beginning, but I think a lot of times pastors only get feedback on good things. And I'm sure you'll find someone in your church that will tell you how much they appreciate that you're still doing 4 10-minute songs of worship. There's someone that thinks that, but we're here to be the voice of reason for the masses for you and let you know that most people don't. You know, I think most people that have kids, certainly those that are there, there's lots of different ways that people can worship online. And frankly, there's people that are probably better musicians than the musicians you have within your church that people could engage with online already. So I want to be the voice of reason, and doing fewer songs is probably a good idea for most pastors.
And that same person that told the pastor that they appreciate that there's still full worship going on, they probably stopped to go get a bowl of cereal or something during one of the songs. So
they probably did. They're probably pulling your leg there. So that brings us to number three. And the way we wrote this is that we think that online services should probably have less talking head time. That is a something that we do in churches, is that we generally have a sermon portion. There's biblical foundation for that. We believe that teaching the word is important, so we're not here to come against any of that. But we probably need to find ways that are not just a talking head on the screen. So you pastors that are listening to this, maybe finding ways where you're not, where your face and you talking into the camera for a 30 to 40 minute sermon probably isn't the best way to spend an online service. And if you're going to do number one and keep it shorter, you're going to have to change that. So out of the gate, I felt like if I was leading a church right now, the target I would be going for would be probably in that 15 minute, maybe a little bit over as much as 20 minute window for the sermon portion. I historically, when I pastored, I was like a 35 to 40 minute sermon kind of guy. So that's how long we would usually talk for. But I would really try to pare that down, I think, in this season right now, just because keeping people engaged and having them looking online at one person talking for one take, that's just a lot to take in right there. So what do you think?
I agree. And I think there's some ideas too to offer there, because, you know, when a pastor hears that and that and when they're considering taking that advice, they might be thinking, well, what else do we do other than record me? And I think that, you know, I know what I've seen a little bit out there. People are visual. Yep. So if you have the ability to get to transition into some nice visuals that perhaps it's a visual that ties to a sermon point that you have, whether or not that's a graphic, whether or not it's a photo, a photo that is the same subject matter. People are visual, and that's one idea. And I think there's some ways to do that without having a big production team, because, you know, for the smaller church, they could be saying, well, we don't have someone to do that. There are some ways. We're not going to dig into all of the different options here. That's not our goal for this, this podcast here. But basically there's some ways to keep it people captivated with different imagery, and some other ways too. But,
I think you're dead right on that.
And leading into, you know, one of the things that we also wanted to talk about as far as being on this kind of how to keep their, not just shorter, keeping things shorter, but keep people's attention, is to offer a synopsis, you know, at the beginning. You know, I think that because people are now, we've jokingly said, you know, You know, and again, hear us the right way, but with people already being challenged to be fully devoted to an online service every week,
right?
You know, and they're thinking in their heads, oh, you know, I love my church, but here we go again. We're doing the virtual thing again. What's, you know, what am I going to be in for today type yeah. thing? So a brief synopsis at the beginning to let people know, hey, this is what we're going to be talking about today. This is what you're going to, here's some of the things you're going to be able to apply. I think that something like that is helpful because it's going to let someone know what they're in for right away. And yeah. they may be able to kind of say to themselves, yeah, okay, you know what? This is something I can spend a little time and sink my teeth into.
Yeah, no, I think you're dead right. Hey, I think that there's two audiences we should be thinking about when we're thinking about how we're doing online services. You have the people that are there and waiting for your service to start at 9:58, you know, they're there and they're tuned in and it's about to go right. live. For those of you that are doing live, most churches I find are, if they're not doing a live stream, they're pre-recording something, but they're airing it at a certain time where everybody right. can watch it together. So there's that audience, but yeah. an even larger audience are the ones that are watching it on demand. And I think the synopsis right. part is really important for those that watch it on demand. And I want to encourage leaders of churches to think, and this might sound strange, but think like a YouTuber and think about YouTube videos that you watch. They always give you a 15 or 20 second short version of what you're going to see in this video, yeah. what you're going to gain from it, what your takeaways are going to be, and give them a reason to stick around.
Yeah.
My
yeah.
wife and I, we were watching, we don't really watch the news very much anymore. Like we get most of our news online, but if you ever watch the news or like one of those morning shows, like the Today Show or something like that, they're famous for talking about what they're going to be talking about in the future
right.
to keep people engaged. So it's almost like a tease of the things yeah. and what's going to be uncovered in this conversation. So I think every single service, it shouldn't just be the person that gets up and opens up in prayer. I think you should probably have a time dedicated to giving people a little bit of a teaser of what's yeah. going to be happening in the service and give them a reason to stick around and watch.
Yeah, and I like the YouTube example that you use because I find myself, we're in a busy rushed world, right? When we have our downtime, when we see something that we may consider watching further, I often, that's the only reason I may move forward. I'll say, if I know what they're going to cover in that, whether or not it's a 15-minute video or a 45-minute video, you know, what they say at the beginning and introduce, that I'm basing a lot of my decision to keep going.
Exactly.
With that. Yeah.
Yep. So yep. You're exactly right. I think that's it. So well, that brings us to number five. And this is something that I think understanding the differences between online service and in-person service, it's really important for number five. And number five, here's what it is. It's every element must be interesting by itself. Every element of the service has to have something that would engage people, because the fundamental difference is that in-person services, you have a captive audience. Like there is a, didn't stop people from doing it to me, but there's a stigma of getting up and walking out of a church service, right? people generally don't want to do that because it kind of makes a statement and everybody looks and sees that person yeah. walking yeah. away. And
that's right.
They wonder what's going on. What did pastor say that made that person get up and leave? So, but online, there's nothing, right? In an online service, yeah. people, if they're not engaged with it, they click off and nobody knows that they clicked off and it's anonymous. Yeah. And so the way that online videos work, and we've seen this with the data, is that a lot of times churches, they're counting views, but most of those views are not people watching the entire hour and 15 or 45 minute service. A lot right. of those views are people that are watching for 22 seconds, didn't get engaged, and they click off. And so what we need to be careful of is that almost, and this is so hard to do, but any segment of the service that it would be engaging all by itself. It wouldn't be predicated on other parts being engaging, but all of your sermon, it's just, I think you probably have to preach a little bit different in this season
yeah.
than you would with an in-person audience. And you, like the way that you do things online is you have to be almost like, you have to be more animated. Think about, again, back to YouTubers, you think about how animated and up and high and engaging those people are. I think a lot of pastors, we need to raise our excitement level because it's important to do that in order to really engage people well. So what do you think about that?
Totally agree. And you brought a funny memory back to mind when my wife and I visited a church a long time ago that when we were there in person, of course, at that time. But because of the distracting nature of someone leaving the congregation while the preaching or worship would happen, they would lock the church doors so that couldn't actually go out. I don't recommend that. But we at that time were truly a captive audience within that church. But I totally agree. And I think it's a good segue to our next point, to making everything interesting, and a way to help pastors do that and get creative is by sharing more testimonies.
Yeah.
That's our sixth point is sharing more testimonies. And there's several reasons why this is good. We all know that testimonies are always powerful, right?
Right.
They've been something powerful no matter when they're delivered. We know God uses those big time. But even more so during this time, as we've addressed, people are craving more connection and in-person interaction. If they can't have that yet, and have to only be online, it makes it so much more human and personal if you can find a way to share testimonials. And they're encouraging. People are discouraged right now too, right? So if they, if it would keep someone engaged. So if you can transition to one or a couple of testimonies within your message at a relevant time, and maybe do a brief video testimony, or even just share, if you can't capture that, share, stop with an amazing testimony and to get someone's attention and get them back engaged. I think those are very powerful right now. The testimonies that have really encouraged me during this time is when we hear about, someone in prison watching our message that decided to get saved, and or someone that considers themselves a member because of how they've been encouraged by our preaching, and they may even be a city that's a 2 hours away from us, and they still consider themselves a member even though they're only online. So sharing as much of testimonies during this time as possible is going to be an encouraging thing to people. And keep them engaged.
Go ahead. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. I think that people are so desperate for personal connection. And while we can't be physically close, I think people can be emotionally close with testimonies. And this is a great way to break up that whole one person talking head kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So rather than you preaching for 35 minutes, I think a 15-minute sermon with one or two, 3 or 4 minute testimonies, that adds so much value to a service, I think, because it paints this picture of people that your members relate to, or people that are just watching who they relate to, and they can have similar kinds of experiences if they kind of step out with God and do those things that they're talking about in the testimony there. So I think that's really great for that purpose. I think it helps offer variety in the service, and then it just really facilitates more personal connection that people need in this time as best as we can. So we all look forward to being able to connect again, but that's important, I think. So let me tackle number seven. This one should be a no-brainer, but I have, for whatever reason, in the services that I've watched, I haven't seen it be happening. So here's what it is: do fewer announcements. You don't need to spend as much time doing announcements, because here's the reality: less stuff is happening right now. For you event-driven type churches out there, I know we've had to pull back from a lot of that. And it's not to say that there aren't announcements to give, but we all knew that announcements were too long already, right? Every pastor we talk to, they're always struggling with, our announcements are too long. You have those 5-minute announcements where we go on and talk about things that maybe aren't relevant. And so here's your chance to break free of the bondage of long announcements. You have this time online. We can finally reduce it. I think that, you really want to be very specific on the things that you do announce. And here's the rule that I find the most successful churches use for their announcements is, if it doesn't matter to almost everybody in the audience, it's probably not something you should announce. So if it only matters to a small subset, so if you're announcing things like our ladies seniors tea is happening in your normal service, well, that's a small subset of your church. Mm. And not that those ministries aren't important, not that they don't value, you don't value them, but they probably aren't announcement worthy in that time right there. So now's the time to do that. Am I right?
Definitely right. And to be clear, you know, we know that, you know, churches that are doing, that are meeting in person and have transitioned back into that, events can be picking back up again. Right. But I'll tell you, it's funny. We've been talking about, you know, what we see on church websites too. Almost every church calendar that I see right now is blank. It doesn't have much. Now, the sermons area and the live streaming page, those are happening. Those are hopping. But the calendar of events, not so much. Yeah. And unless you have, there's virtual events and there could be a driveway, small group stuff or whatever we're talking about or so on. So, but you're right. And I think, you know, a lot of I could say, you know, for my church, we tried to get people involved in announcements at the beginning of this shutdown and at the beginning of our online broadcast, just so that we can get other staff involved. And that's the, you know, it's a noble effort and it's nice, but it's still, again, with this whole theme of keeping things shorter and also relevant, right? When there's not as much going on, it can really be eliminated unless there's really something big that needs to be discussed. Yeah, and
I think there's probably space for an announcement or two, but just, you know, if you're paring your service down to 30 to 45 minutes, you can't do announcements the way that we already should have shrunk them down. You can't keep doing them the same way that we used to. So I think that's important for churches. So why don't you finish us up with number eight?
Yeah, I think it's a good finishing point. And because after if we can accomplish all of these things we've talked about, what we have to do at the end is call someone to action. Yeah. You know, so that's our final point is having clear calls to action, actually to be specific, we've talked about this in previous episodes about, you know, with what you're presenting online, you know, traditionally a lot of churches have just put some content or information out there and don't ask anyone to do with it. Same thing when you're doing an in-person service or online, but I think especially online, we have to be clear about what that next step is, because if it's just, hey, you know, we're hoping that people come watch our messages on a weekly basis or watch them on demand, it can't stop there. There has to be something. And again, people are longing for connection somehow. And even if that can't be in person, it's got to be something. What do you want them to do, take away? And I don't mean just an altar call and applying, salvation, even though that's the number one call to action we all want, right? Is for someone to be led to Jesus. It's got to be something after the message has been delivered, and even throughout, and not always at the end. We always think of calls to action being at the end, and though at the end of some sort of a presentation, whether or not that's with content or speaking, and it is often there. But I think whether or not it's letting people know how to further connect, if that's filling out an online connection card or a prayer request card or something to get further in touch or to follow. We can go on and on with ideas about that, but I think it's really important that we think through, you know, if we're accomplishing all of these things, what do we want people to do with that?
Yeah. So here's my thinking on this is that back in when we were doing all in-person services, most churches that were doing something, they had some kind of call to action at the end of every service, whether it be an invitation to communion or it was an altar call to give your life over to Jesus or sign up to be baptized, those kinds of things. But there's something that when you're in person, it's an easier transition to make, to take a step, right? So how many times when I was pastoring, did people come up to me after the service and say, hey, you were talking about this and I want to do this, or hey, could you pray for me? They could make that kind of a leap there. Online, it's different because you're watching content and you know, for a lot of platforms, you could comment, I guess, on there saying, but a lot of times people don't want to offer a public comment on, you know, that they want to receive Jesus as their Lord and Savior, put that in the comment section. That doesn't really fly for most people. I mean, God bless you. If that's what you do, that'd be fantastic. I would take that all day.
That's great.
Yeah. That is good. But 99% of people aren't that bold. And making that leap to take a step is harder on, it's harder for people online if we're not giving them really clear ways to do it.
Yep.
Because what they'd have to do otherwise is the video ends or they finish watching the content, the service, then they would start typing out an email or pick up the phone and call. And we know in this day and age, people don't pick up the phone. We communicate by text at the most, and that's the most that we'll do with someone. So I think giving people really clear steps to take where you would tell them in your sermon, hey, if you want to decide to follow Jesus today, we want to know there's a form right below this video here. Fill that out. There's no pressure involved with that. We're not going to bother you. We just want to know that you're praying with us here today, and we want to give you some resources and a gift and kind of encourage you on your way. So giving people a chance to do that, or giving them a chance to sign up to be baptized, or giving them a clear way to sign up to be a part of a virtual small group, if that's what your church is doing, but making it
or
very
a membership
clear.
Class, like we talked about, a virtual membership class. We talked about that a bit.
Yeah. Giving them clear ways to do that, I think, is just really, really important, because if we don't do that, no one is going to respond unless they're very, very bold to get out there and take the step on their own there. So, yeah, I think that's important. So, well, anything else to add, partner?
No, not much. I did want to touch upon this. I think I've been seeing churches more and more do that, fill out this to receive a gift. Hmm. And so I'll touch just to expand on that a little bit. People are craving something physical right now, human physical interaction. It does give them, for a lot of churches, it shouldn't be too tough to maybe even if it's a $5 Starbucks gift card, maybe it's I know my church here where it's blazing hot in Austin, Texas, you know, we give out the little water bottles. They're not the big expensive Yetis or anything like that. That's not in the budget, but it's the little, the ones with the carabiner and the little metal ones. And it's something, you know, to say, hey, we physically connected to you and you can send that to them. I think it takes a little bit of work to put that together, but it's worth it. And, you know, and we've been talking a lot about keeping people engaged and helping them feel connected if they can't physically do so. So yeah, just to leave that idea with some pastors that hear this, that maybe haven't thought of that or haven't taken the plunge yet.
That's a good reminder. So all calls to action need to have some kind of an incentive. And that just means that we explain to people what they gain from filling out this form or letting us know or reaching out to us, so that we have to make sure that they know. Sometimes it's a gift. Sometimes it's a spiritual step that they're taking that they want to take, but they need to know what they gain and what their incentives are with all that. So yeah, that's good.
It's good.
Good way to put that. So, well, great. I think that's eight. I hope that's been helpful for you guys. Thank you so much for engaging and listening with us. And we hope to see you again next week, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening to the Reach Right podcast. We hope this episode will help you reach people the right way. Looking for more resources for your church? Check us out online at reachrightstudios.com. If this episode has been helpful to you, it would mean the world to us if you would rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.